Now on Radio 4, the comedian and writer Richard Herring presents the second in a series in which he investigates the bad habits that affect us in the workplace. Today, he's exploring the problem of laziness.
Sometimes you see these guys whipping around the office on this little two-legged or two-wheeled vehicle known as the Segway. All sorts of fun happens on. You can race each other around the office, obstacle courses.
An employee at the internet search engine Google at the company's UK headquarters. Is he at play? Is he just doing a bit of blue sky thinking? Or has he regenerated as his teenage self like Tom Hanks in Big? We'll find out later. Laziness isn't just the preserve of students and middle management. It's estimated that absenteeism cost the UK economy more than £13 billion last year. And the average employee took almost 7 days off sick. And for at least four of those days, I reckon they were suffering from skivalitis and just watching Crown Court and Pipkins in their pyjamas. Like 8% of the workforce, I sometimes work from home. Or fail to. Alas, I am my own boss, so I have to motivate myself, which is a problem because I am the most useless employee in the world. I'd sack myself and hire someone else. But there's a lot of nepotism going on in my company. But how can the organisations that are losing all this money encourage their staff to wake up and get working? Psychologist Oliver James is the author of the books Affluenza and The Selfish Capitalist. He questions the very definition of laziness.
I've always thought that laziness doesn't exist, that laziness is a myth. What is frequently mistaken for laziness is actually somebody who is simply not engaged in the activity that they're supposed to be engaged in. Nobody is lazy if they are going to see a football match that they long to go and see or writing a poem that they've longed to write. Nobody's lazy in those sort of activities if they're engaged in them because it just doesn't enter into it.
It's true, I'm not lazy when it comes to my real passion, testing hammocks. I could do that for 40 hours a week, no problem. Tom Hodgkinson has made a career out of laziness. He's written a book called How to Be Idle.
The work ethic has been governing our moves and our kind of everyday working philosophy for about 200 or 300 years. It's actually a kind of man-made creation, and it ignores the fact that actually we're reflective beings and we enjoy doing nothing, we enjoy simply being. Roughly 60-70% of people are more or less unhappy in their jobs. So it's those people that we're saying, well, you know, you can change things.
And by the way, that figure of 60-70% comes from the Work Foundation. But Oliver James believes our lack of motivation is partly due to the recognition that all our hard graft is most likely going towards buying another ivory back scratcher for our work-shy fat cat employers.
A fundamental thing that pretty much everybody in this country is aware of when they go to work is that they're making somebody else incredibly rich. The real hourly rate that we're paid in Britain as well as in America has not increased at all since the 1970s for the average person. But of course, the richest people have got massively much richer. And although people don't necessarily make this explicit to themselves, it is hugely significant in how pretty much everybody feels when they turn up at their workplace. They're dimly aware that they're not getting any richer, making a tiny few people who they may glimpse in the newspapers or in the distance in their workplace a hell of a lot richer.
That is the sound of thousands of letters being sorted at Royal Mail's Nine Elms Lane sorting office in South London. In 2004, 6.5% of their 170,000 workers across the UK were absent daily. That's roughly 11,000 posties pulling sickies every day. Those figures are incredible. Who knew it was so few? You'd think the other 159,000 would have managed to get one or two letters through.
OK, we're heading down to what feels like the bowels of the building that may not be to check out the actual work environment, the sorting office. We're in, I think this might be it, we're in some massive warehouse-style room with lots of machines.
I went to meet Royal Mail's chief medical officer, Dr. Steve Borman, to find out about their huge battle with absenteeism.
I think businesses often don't realise what it does actually cost them.
And how much was it actually costing you at the stage?
Well, very simply, non-attendance was costing Royal Mail hundreds of millions of pounds.
In fact, this was costing Royal Mail over £1 million a day. So what was the solution? To throw all the letters in the bin and claim they'd never had them in the first place? one of the things they did proved to be a huge hit with employees.
Well, one of the communication initiatives that we introduced was called Be In It to Win It. And this was a prize draw for all of those who had full attendance over a 6-month period. And for those who were entered into the draw, there was the opportunity to win one of a number of cars. And all of those that had full attendance received a letter from our chairman saying thank you.
And how many cars did you actually give away?
And we gave away 37 in the first round and 42 in the second.
What kind of message do you think it's sending out to people to offer a prize to come to work?
Well, it wasn't as simple as that, because at the same time as we were launching the draw scheme, we were providing a lot of information about what the impact of non-attendance actually was, what the impact was on colleagues around you, what the impact was on the customers, and the impact that it had on quality of service and security of the business for the future.
It didn't take the posties too long to realise that it would be no fun taking a sickie from a company that no longer existed.
Take this job and shove it. I ain't working here no more.
Unsurprisingly, Tom Hodgkinson is no stranger to making that croaky 9 a.m. call to the office.
The sickie is a way of reclaiming lost dignity. That's how I see it in the workplace. So you're more or less a slave in most jobs. You feel like a slave. You're running to somebody else's schedule. So to phone in sick is to grab back a piece of time for yourself. That's a way of getting one day back for yourself every now and then, or 2 days to lie in bed and read Sherlock Holmes books.
How many of the sick days do you think were actually genuine sick days, and how many people were skiving off?
Well, I think it's often a mistake to think that people are not genuine, that people are malingering, that they want to be off sick.
Dr. Steve Borman.
Everyone who stays at home has a genuine reason for staying at home. It might not necessarily be because they're so ill that they can't come to work, but it might be that there are other things like problems with childcare, the cat is ill, so on and so forth. And it's a question of getting underneath that and understanding where there are other problems.
I used to skive off all the time when I had proper jobs.
Well, your employer was obviously not a good employer.
I'm self-employed now, I still skive off. It's a terrible affliction.
I spoke to Basil, one of the posties in the sorting office.
How many sick days have you had so far this year?
This year, none so far. Basically, what they try to do is, like, if you've got a problem, they kind of help you to sort that out. So you don't need to take any time off to go sick just to sort it out. With certain managers, you can be upfront with them and tell them exactly what you're feeling and what's happening, and they will allow you the time off.
Before this, you'd used to take more sick days.
Oh, yeah, I used to, like, one day off, one day on.
We've been doing some work with the London School of Economics to independently evaluate the impact of all of the programmes, and they've confirmed that over a 3-year period, as a business, we've saved something like £227 million. And in absolute terms, that means that we have reduced our non-attendance by 25%.
So treating employees with some respect and providing real incentives seems to go a long way to making them want to turn up, something that the bosses at Google seem to understand. Set up by Larry Page and Sergey Brin in the late 1990s, Google's productivity and profitability has earned them billions in advertising revenue. When it comes to keeping their 19,000 employees content and motivated, they apparently come second only to Willy Wonka. They haven't quite got a river of chocolate flowing through the office. Not yet, but their ethos of it's okay to play is everywhere you look. I went to their London headquarters, where long-time employee Graham Cook gave me a tour of the wonderland that is their workplace.
We're here meeting Graham. Hello, Graham.
Hi, how's it going? Nice to meet you.
This is the games room.
So what happens in here? There's some pool tables.
There's a piano in case you want to play piano. I think the most popular game in here would be Guitar Hero. It's taken pretty seriously. If you want to take a break and you want to just clear your mind, people come down here for a sort of 10-minute go on the guitar.
Yeah, there's no one in here, though. No one is taking advantage of this. I've been here all day. What's going on?
I guess people are either working or it's lunchtime. The company, 10 years ago, when it started by Larry and Sergey, they wanted to create a startup environment where things felt like you could play a game for a bit, you could work hard. But they've tried to keep that mentality the whole way. And it's not lip service. It's a genuine attitude throughout the company.
But wouldn't most UK managers see this kind of environment as being unconducive to productivity, a license for laziness even? Here's Google press officer Laura Scott.
You're right. Lots of people would think, you know, gosh, why do you create such a funky environment with all these quirky things? But I think people at Google have lots of creative ideas and they're very focused on innovation. And one of the great ways to stimulate people is to have a healthy working environment and have lots of fun things that can stimulate debate. The other thing, of course, is that if you know anything about engineers, and we're obviously an engineering company, you'll know that they can work strange hours. And so if they can do that in a massage chair or in a swing or from a deck chair, then you tend to find they come up with the most amazing ideas.
Because what I do is I Google myself when I'm trying to do stuff, but you wouldn't want to do that here. That's like work.
Yeah, I think people here are focusing on the next big thing for Google. And probably the way they do that, a big part of that is the environment.
But Oliver James is predictably cynical about these kinds of incentives.
The idea for corporations of having relaxed environments in which they have sofas and people are supposed to play, etc., etc., is obviously a ridiculous charade. Is trying to give the pretense of encouraging actual creativity. Offices and corporations try to create environments in which they give the pretense of authenticity. What they want you to do is to apply yourself in a way that makes them money. And everybody knows that. Everybody's in on it from the start. When corporations say to their staff, let's have fun, you know that this is just a way of trying to milk you a bit more, getting some of the juices that they haven't managed to get out of you into them.
So we're now in the atrium, which is essentially a nice space because it's got all the light from the roof coming down and it's just somewhere to really relax.
There's multicolored deck chairs here and massive beanbags and wall you can write on, massage chair. There's another little cafe where you can sit and have Maltesers.
People grab a big beanbag, just sit on their own, pop their headphones on, and actually just do a little bit of work away from their desk. Yeah. And that's a pretty relaxing thing to be doing.
So if I came here and took away your Segway and all the chairs and all the toys, what kind of place would it be like to work in then?
I don't think it would be Google anymore. You're not going to spend your whole day playing a game. But I think without all of that, it would be very different. I wouldn't recognize it.
Are they just not fooling you into thinking that you're not at work by putting these few bits of stuff around? Really, without it, it's just an office.
Yeah, I think that we spend a lot of our lives working, and I think that if you can come to a place that you're genuinely excited to be at every day, then you're at the right place. And silly as it may seem, this sort of stuff really does add a lot of fun to what you do.
There does seem to be a place for some encouraged listlessness at work, then. And maybe we have our best ideas when we feel valued and relaxed. Perhaps laziness is an essential part of being human, and Aristotle was right when he said the contemplative life was by far the happiest life. Our idling hero Tom Hodgkinson came to a sticky end when he tried to hold down a 9-to-5 job.
The idler is very lazy in a conventional working environment, and that was the case with me. I had a job when I was late, I was feckless, lazy, difficult to employ, but if you find your own path, then actually you can be capable of periods of quite hard work.
You won't be surprised to hear that Tom was eventually fired from his job. He believes it's important that we embrace our inner laziness.
There's a great statistic, work kills 2.2 million people a year, which we found from the UN. And that's work-related accidents, work-related disease. It's well known the link between stress and heart disease. Heart disease is probably the biggest killer in the UK. If we could learn to sit at home and do nothing, then the world would be a much less dangerous place. It's this kind of man's need to do things, build skyscrapers, conquer other lands. A very practical idea would be to bring back the Sabbath. Don't do anything on Sunday. Don't even mow the lawn or do any gardening. It really is supposed to be a day of complete rest. For me, idleness is actually a grabbing hold of life, but a grabbing hold of a life that you created for yourself, not one that's been handed down.
Take this job and shove it. I ain't working.
That was Bad Habits, presented by Richard Herring. The next habit to be investigated is lateness. And I'm not being funny, but that's in a fortnight's time. The series producer is Lucy Greenwell, and it was a unique production for BBC Radio 4.